Welcome to the Yeshiva Shalmaila. This is David Lichtenstein. This week we're going to be speaking about very current news, secular holidays, Xmas, New Year's, etc. Holiday parties. Can you wish your mailman, your coworker, you know, happy holiday, happy New Year, or Merry Xmas? Gift giving. You walk in and a coworker, a client, a boss has a big basket full of Trefa products for you. What do you do? Do you throw it on the floor or are there other options? We're going to have Rabbi Daniel Neustadt. He's the Rav of Pine River in Lakewood. He's the Rav of High Lifeline, standing in really very great shoes of both Rabbi Bluth and Rabbi David Feinstein, Zecharon Levracha. He's the Mechaber of Emes LeYaakov, his grandfather of Yankov Saira. These are going to be some of the topics we're going to be discussing with him, the halacha. We're going to have Rabbi Ari Wasserman, our very own Rabbi Ari Wasserman, who's written two books about the topic in the workplace. Before he moved to Eretz Yisrael and dedicated himself full-time to learning, Rabbi Wasserman was one of the top law firms in the world, and Sullivan Cromwell, for sure the top five in New York, and he's encountered basically every problem you could imagine halachically, both for holidays, gift giving, etc. He's going to tell us what it's like at the ground level. And then we're going to have Ralph Hertzka, the CEO of Meridian. He's going to advise many of our listeners, our young people, they're in business, the art of gift giving. Ralph is known for his incredible network and his ability to enhance relationships, business relationships, through gift giving, holiday parties, etc. He will give us advice how to do it in a legal manner, in a kosher manner, both halachically, hashkafically, as well as in a way to make your business grow. So this week we decided to sort of interweave the practical as well as the halacha. Rabbeisai, what are your thoughts? 732-806-8700, press number 2. That's for what the B'nai HaYeshiva have to say. Or info@headlinesbook.com. We will post both messages, voicemails, as well as written, unless you request otherwise. But we're interested in what the Olam has to say. Before we go to our wonderful guests, I would like to say a word on the Parsha, as usual. And you know, Machlokes is something that, unfortunately, we all come across. We heard a few weeks ago about divorce. Unfortunately, there's too much of it in our community. But what about internecine family disputes? Siblings, parents, children. What about it could be a partner? So this week is a resolution of the greatest machlokes that happens in Sefer Bereishis, Yosef and the Shvatim. Imagine the Torah, we said it before, Al Shloisha V'loy Ashivenu, Al Michram B'Kesef Tzadik, the greatest machlokes. And it is here the brothers and Yosef come back to each other again. They bond again. What is it in this machlokes, in this resolution rather, that we could possibly learn something for ourselves? So here's something interesting. The Torah spends 13 psukim, Vayigash Elav Yehuda, where Yehuda really recounts step for step, word for word, everything that occurred in the parasha before. And the Ramban actually asks, he says, what is he accomplishing? What's he achieving? What's the purpose of repeating the exact same story back? Now, Rashi, it seems, struggles with this too. And Rashi says that really there was more going on here than meets the eye. When he says, Mikamoche Kapara, he really meant, I'll destroy Mitzrayim, I'm more powerful. But Rashi really deviates from the Pashit Pshat. Let me suggest a Pshat to you. Relationships. When somebody says a relationship went bad, so you ask them why, they say, it's Basheret. It was Basheret. It wasn't Basheret. I have bad news for you. It wasn't Basheret. Anger doesn't happen in a vacuum. Emotions don't at large, don't occur for, you know, trivial, you know, unknown purposes, right? What does Yehuda do here? Yehuda's in a relationship with Yosef that has gone really bad. And for seemingly strange reasons, Yosef shows great anger. He tries to frame them with the money. It's quite hostile, right? He wants to take their brother away from them. And Yehuda's in this relationship and he says, you know what? I'm going to take ownership of it. It's not Basheret. I'm going to take ownership. I'm going to take responsibility. So what does he do? He walks through the entire story, piece by piece, searching, where could have I possibly done something wrong? Because that's the truth. In relationships, when something doesn't work out, we could say it's Basheret. Or we could say, you know, bad things don't happen in vacuums. What could have I done What happened here that could be fixed, that could be owned? Let's break it down piece by piece. Let me accept responsibility. And here's what's interesting. Yehuda didn't have to do that. Yehuda could have said, you know, what does the Torah say? Who's really responsible for this? So Chazal say, Le'olam al yishan adam b'noi ben habanim, shebishvil shnei sloim shenasan Yaakov liyosef, niskanu b'yachav. The Torah, Chazal really put the responsibility somewhere at Yaakov's feet. You know, he created such animosity by favoring them. You know, the Malbim says they thought that he loves Yosef so much that just like by Avram, there was Yishmael and Yitzchak, and Yishmael's out of the picture. By Yitzchak, there was, you know, Esav and Yaakov. Esav left the picture. They were actually worried that maybe it's Yosef, and they're all out of the picture. So Yehuda really could have pointed fingers back at Yaakov and not accepted responsibility. But he doesn't. He says, I own it. I'm accepting responsibility. I'm going to delve into every facet of this relationship. You know, we have a klal in Chazal, kimayim panim al panim. The way you treat somebody is how they treat you. And Yehuda accepts that here. Now, if I have a listener, he's going to say, what? First of all, kimayim panim al panim, when you're dealing with an autocrat like Yosef, a dictator, that doesn't work. And you say kimayim panim al panim, accept responsibility. David Lichtenstein, he never met my wife, such a klafta. Or I'll have a listener who's saying, he never met my husband, such a rough. What do you, you know, Yosef and Pari, you're wrong, you're off base. So let me bring you a proof. You know, in the mirror where I learned, every time you postulated something, the immediate response was, Mehechatesa, bring a raya. I'll bring you a raya. A few parshas ago, Esav wants to kill Yaakov. So his mother Rivka tells him, V'ata b'ni, Shma b'kayli, brach lecha elavan achi chara, elavan achi charana. Run away, flee, to lavan to charan, ad asher toshuv chamas achicha, until your brother's rage subsides. And she continues, ad yoshuv chamas achicha mimcha. Now, in Pshischa, and this is brought in Siach Sarfei Kodesh from Rabbi Yankov Amshinover, it's brought in other svarim from others, Deo Machavin, is what's the double lashon? Until Ad Asher Toshuv Chamas Achich, until Esav's anger subsides, Ad Yoshuv Chamas Achich Mimcha. It sounds like a stutter. Torah doesn't stutter. So they say, no, it's saying two things. Until Esav's anger subsides, and you know why else you should go? Ad Yoshuv Chamas Achich Mimcha, until your anger subsides against Esav. Because if you didn't hate Esav, he wouldn't hate you. Now listen to this. Kimayim panim al panim, we're talking about Esav Harasha, Yisrael Mummer, he's called. Rashi says, Avodah Zarah, Gilei Arayot, and Shfichas Damim. He would kidnap wives. You're talking about a really, really bad guy. The only reason he hated Yaakov is because Yaakov hated him. That's what they say. Kimayim panim al panim. Relationships reflect each other. Accept ownership of it. It's your responsibility. That's the message of Yehuda here. Somebody sent me, we have a lot of listeners. A listener sent us a really beautiful story, and we'll post it online. It's a little long, so I'd have the person say it themselves. I'll say it, you know, the abbreviated format. He says, this fellow says he was in Kollel, and he saved up $1,000 to get a car. And he told his wife, really, we should get the car. He talked to her, so she said, okay. So they went to the auction. It was a few hours away, and I think the auctions used to be in Pennsylvania. I actually bought one when I was in Yeshiva, a car at one of those auctions. And he took so his wife is standing by the auction. Now, by these car auctions, you know, not a lot of white-collar people. It's a lot of, you know, blue-collar and, you know, mechanics and all the, you know, the people who fix cars for livings. And this Yeshiva man, his wife said, you know, the $1,000, it's a lot of money. Put it in your shoe so that it stays safe because I'm worried about pickpockets. So this guy said to his wife, no, you don't have to worry. I put it in my pocket. On top of that, I put in paper towels and tissues and buttoned it so that if anybody tries to take it, it's impossible. First of all, they can't do it. And second of all, if they did, they'll end up with the paper towels. Now, nothing to worry about. His wife said, you sure? I'm sure. Half an hour later, somebody taps him on the shoulder. He says, yeah. He says, you know, I saw somebody like lifting up your jacket before. You may want to check that your wallet is still there. So this guy's heart sinks. Puts his hand in his pocket. Paper towels are there, the tissues are there, the money is gone. And he turns white, he tells his wife, the money is gone. They have no more money, so they drive back a few hours, sitting in the car. And he's thinking, what is she going to tell me? His wife turns to him and she says to him, you know, you'll save up some more. It'll take another 2 months and you'll come back and you'll buy a car. And this guy said he was so moved. He says, I have to one day remember this and pay her back. A few years later, his sister's getting married and he has to go get a suit. His wife says, go buy a new suit. So he goes to Borough Park. He buys a suit and a shirt and a tie. He, mommy, she looks fabulous, comes home. And they're leaving to the Hasana, a long drive away. They put everything in the car, drives to the Hasana. They're there a few hours earlier for pictures. They're unpacking. And he asks his wife, where's my suit? She says, what do you mean? I put it in the car. She runs out to the car. She comes back. She says, I forgot to pack your suit. And he's wearing like, you know, this yeshivish wrinkled, you know, what you wear during the week, a blue suit with a stain on the shirt. And she's looking at him and he looks at his wife and he says, you know, I can all spot clean my suit. Nobody will ever know the difference. They're going to be looking at the chassan and kali. You think anybody's looking at my suit? Anyway, it's dark in chassan halls. Okay. Goes into the bathroom. He's washing the stains off. He looks, turns around and he sees his wife is talking to their three children. He listens in by the door and his wife is saying, do you know, your Abba is such a tzaddik. I forgot his suit. I thought he would just blow up. He didn't say a word to me. Nothing. I'm giving you all a bracha that you should grow up, you should vaksais to be like your Abba. And the guy said how moved he was, etc. So who sent me this story? A bacha, trying to get married. And he says, he's gone out with a lot of girls. He says, if I found a girl like this, I'd get married in a minute. In a minute! And I thought about it. And I sent him back. I said, you know, do you think behavior like this happens in a vacuum? I said, if you're mechabed your wife, and at a time when you really could have blown up because some real big mistake happens, you say to her, no, next time. How do you think she's going to behave when you make a mistake? It's kemayim panim al panim. I said, so don't say, if I found a girl like this, I'd marry her in a moment. The proper response is, if you behave this way, you can create this relationship. So what's the takeaway from the 13 psukim? The Torah learns es l'rabba from one word es hayadirish kol es in shebatera l'rabba is talmidei chacham. The Torah is so frugal with letters. 13 psukim to how Yehuda describes everything. Yehuda was searching, what could have I done wrong in this relationship? And ultimately, he was right. That was the answer. It was right in front of him. So I bless us all. I bless me. We should, in our relationships, accept responsibility. And when there's something wrong, take ownership of it. It's probably me. I could own that. Let's go to our riddle of the week. So here's our riddle of the week. It says, Vayomer Yosef el Achiv Gishuno Elai Vayigashu. So Rashi brings, they were terrified. They didn't know who he was. They didn't believe him. So Hera Lohem Shu Mol. He showed them that he's a mole, so it must be their brother. Right, that's Rashi on the spot. Here's a fabulous kasha. The Rambam in Perek Yud of Hilchos Malacha Malacha He says that all Bnei Keturah that were Zari Shel Avram that came after Yishmol were Chayiv B'Mila. And he says, V'hoyul v'nisaruvu hayoyim b'nei Yishmol b'bnei Keturah. They're all Mechuyiv in Mila. All Arabs are Mechuyiv in Mila. He says, Apella, according to the Rambam that holds that all Bnei Keturah Chayiv B'Mila, why did they believe Yosef when they saw that he was Mol? Maybe he was from Bnei Keturah, and that's why he was Mol. That is our riddle of the week. We will, of course, have at the end of the program, we put on everyone, both ones in the answers, both in voice and in writing. I want to make an announcement. Be'ezra Hashem, in not this Sunday, but the week following, we're starting a new program. I've been asked, you know, to do it for a number of years by people. That every day, I'm going to do 4 minutes of halacha and maybe a vart. You're taking off your tefillin, you're getting in the car. It's going to be some interesting halacha. Very often it'll be tied to the daf of that day. So it'll be like some contemporary question. You're learning this week, you're learning about making pas or in either milchiks or fleishiks. We'll talk about the halachic ramifications. Can you have it? How do you have an OUD product? There's no simen in the bread. So we'll take some contemporary issue, either from the daf or from, alternatively, from if it's, you know, Shloshim Yoyim before Purim or Pesach, from that, something for you that you will have immediately a question, an answer, something to discuss. Or maybe if it's some small vart on the Parsha afterwards, or if it's a yard site, but something 4 minutes a day to get you going. And there's going to be three ways to get it. You can come to our website, that's the headlines, and you could either get it by WhatsApp. It'll be available every morning by email or by text. And you choose how would you like to get your 4 minutes of Kihem Chayenu V'Eirach Yameinu of pure plasma in the morning. And that'll, again, that'll start a week. Blinaid, I'm going to try this until Pesach. It's just my days of Baruch Hashem very full, so it's another Achrayus, and I hope I can get it done. So at least for God, Bezer Hashem, for the next 90 days or so, we'll try to do it, and then we'll see how it goes.
As always, if you'd like to send in a comment, 732-806-8700, and for comments, it's 2. Or you can email us, info@headlinesbook.com. We do put up the comments and the letters online where readers or listeners can access them unless you request otherwise.
Let's go to our wonderful guest. Joining us from Lakewood, New Jersey, is Rav Daniel Neustadt. He's the Rav in Pine River Village. He's also was the writer of M.S. Liakov, the fabulous bestseller of Tyrus of his grandfather, of Yankov Kamenetsky, He's also the Rav of High Lifeline. He stands in the shoes of Rav David Feinstein, Rabbi Bluth, a very, Paskin was really much bigger shilas than this. Welcome, Rav Neustadt.
Hello, good evening. How are you?
So let me ask you, we want to talk about the holidays, parties, etc. Let's start with the easy things. You want to give your maid a holiday gift. You want to give, just the people who work for you, the people, the mailman, the postman, etc., the newspaper, any halachas that people should be aware of that, is there a problem of lois hachanim, etc.?
We generally do not consider that lois hachanim, because the real reason why we give these people gifts is not because we love them and not because we want to be friends with them and give them free things, but we do so because it cultivates relationships that we can benefit from it. When a person who works for you is compensated properly and receives a gift and is appreciated, they'll do the job better. They'll come more often. They won't go to a competitor. They'll be more reliable. So we do it for ourselves. We allow to help ourselves. That's not a free gift at all to them. So lois hachanim is not an issue when this is the reason for the gift, which is normally is.
Right. In other words, you're doing it for a benefit. So Rabbi Zusa, what would be the halacha? Somebody gets out of a taxi in Manhattan, and are they allowed to tip the driver? Will be a problem of lois hachanim?
Well, I think that taxi tips are part of the service. I don't usually go in taxis in Manhattan, but I believe that tipping is sort of like part of the charge. You need to tip. It's standard procedure. And if you don't do that, I think that it is, I don't know if it's illegal, but it's certainly, you look bad, it's a potential chilul Hashem. And even a small chance of making a chilul Hashem is enough to override this halacha. In other words, this is not lois hachanim. You're doing this because this is the accepted way of how people are compensated when they drive a taxi. I believe that to be true.
Rabbi Neustadt, I'm going to ask you a political hot potato. Feel free to say no, but by me, I don't think linearly. Since we're talking Kufna Aleph, right, in Yeridaya, there's been, again, feel free to say, let's move on. I know that in certain Jewish homes, our current president, who's a Meir D'Gai of Yisrael, probably the most in history, and the more for Eretz Yisrael than anybody in history, but Mazing Tzmir is Feganem, they hang pictures at the house. Is it a Shaila of Leisachah name, at the end of Kufnan Aleph, it says, for an Einu Yehudi, you're not allowed to be Mishabeachim, you're not allowed to, is that a problem of Leisachah name?
Well, if you mishabech his policies and you mishabech what he does for the Jewish people, that's okay. If you talk about the greatness of the person, so then you're crossing into that perhaps forbidden area. And yeah, it should not happen. It should not happen for a lot of reasons, because we don't idolize anybody, but even without lois hachanim. But yes, it is. When you say that he's such a great person, that is lois hachanim. But if you say that his actions are great and that he's beneficial to us, then that's okay. And especially when it comes to election season and you're trying to electioneer, you're trying to say, why one should vote for him as opposed to the other candidate, that's for sure okay, because that's a benefit for us. You're doing it for us, you're not doing it for him. We're trying to explain why he's the person that we should go for. That's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go now to holiday gifts. It's the end of the year, and your biggest supplier is from Kentucky, and he's mamish, you know, a guy mit alle hidurim. And he's expecting an Xmas gift. Or how do you deal with this and with the problems of the Shulchan Aruch of Lefnei Yedeim or possible Abizrayu Davayi Zara people? So give us some halachic guidance here.
Yeah, I mean, the best way to deal with this is to send it as early in the season as possible, because I think people accept holiday gifts not just around the exact holiday. You could probably do so already in December 10th or December 12th or December 14th. And it's a kind of a seasonal gift. This is the normal way how people do business. And when you have a supplier or when you have a major customer, you are expected to gift them during this part of the year. It has nothing to do with the celebration of the holiday. It's completely commercial, completely business. It's just the way our business is done. And it doesn't really run afoul of the din that you don't give them lifnei dayim. It used to be, again, that halach is based on the fact that as soon as they got a gift, which was unexpected, they ran and they praised their getzka. So therefore, you're causing a grama, you're causing a lifnei iver, you're causing a berizara. But that's not, today it's expected. Actually, if you don't give it, you're crossing a line. So you have to give it. It's part of how business is done. But in order to avoid like a maris ayin or some kind of a connection for the holiday, keep it away from the actual 25th. Keep it away as much as possible from that, either way before or way after, and then it's okay.
Now, what about, let's say, going to a New Year's party? Are there any religious connotations to New Year's today in America?
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. New Year's is the beginning of the new secular year. It's a financial year. It's just a calendar year. It's nothing to do with Avodah Zarah. And when you're going to a New Year's party, initially perhaps it was, yeah. But
initially the old Kaimrim knew that it was the Yom of Milav. It was the Milav Isaish. He was born 8 days before New Year's. Yeah. But nobody, right. I don't think, if you ask 1,000 Yom, I don't think 999 would know that.
Right. Besides, when he had his Mila, he was Jewish still. So that in itself is not a very bizarre. So there's really nothing wrong with it. You know, and in and of itself, and of course, whenever you go to a party, you have to know how to behave at a party and what kind of party you got to go to. But intrinsically, the fact that it's celebrated in the New Year itself, it's not enough of a bizarre issue. The question is, it might be a chukas akum issue. It might be. Because they're celebrating something which is not Jewish at all. It's a goyish thing. Even if it's not a berizara, it's certainly goyish. And when you celebrate something like that, it might be a chukas ha'akum issue. You know, Moshe, in his number of tshuvas, is very machmir in this issue, more so than other pleiskim. Moshe even held that even a bar mitzvah should not be held on New Year's or one of these days, because it looks like you're celebrating New Year's. Like a maris ayin, that you're celebrating a goyish thing, but after chukasem leiselecho, the concept was not because of the mitzvah. But, you know, that relation, I don't know, it's not been accepted. People do chasanas and simchas and any goyish holiday, and people are not careful of that at all. And one of the reasons is because you can't get halls, and whenever you can get a hall, you'll take it. It's not an accepted halacha today for whatever reason.
Okay. Now let's talk about gifting, and this happens to me all the time. You want to send a non-kosher bottle of wine to some guy in Akasha, in Arkansas, wherever it may be. Are you permitted to send a non-kosher bottle of wine?
Certainly, that's not something that you should do, because a non-kosher bottle of wine is called today, from a halachical perspective, that's called stam yenim. We no longer have yayin mesach, because that just doesn't happen. But there's a stam yenim, which in the Rabbanim, they made a gzera against any wine that is handled by a non-Jew, which is certainly handled by a non-Jew when this was manufactured. And they offered it there. And according to the Machlek, big Machlek is in the Rishonim, and it's a Machlek is in Shulchan Aruch, but in the Mechaber and the Ramah. But we are certainly machmer lechatchila to consider stam yenim along the same lines as yayin esach, even though it's not connected, really, but the gzeira that they made against Stam Yenim, they used the Reisidika lines and the same issue. Now, Stam Yenim is also by Noah. You're not allowed any benefits from it. So it comes out if that's the anesach. If, according to many Rishonim, Stam Yenim is also Asabana, so therefore when you are buying this bottle of wine and deriving benefits from it by giving it to a non-Jew, to your, as your guest recipient, so you're being Mehenah from Stam Yenim, which the Ramah asks certainly in Lechatchila. In Makam Hefsa Meruba, there are some Paiskim that are Mater, and
the Ramah is not the matter,
but you have to know what he means. You know, it doesn't mean you could go. You were saying a case that you were going to buy a bottle of wine to give. That's not a Hefsa Meruba.
Yeah,
the case might be if you were to receive. Right, the case might be if you receive a very expensive bottle of non-kosher wine, and you want to now gift it further to a non-Jew, that might be a hefsed, because it's worth a lot of money, and you know what, otherwise you have to throw it out. So on that, there's some room for leniency, perhaps, a little bit. But to go ahead and buy wine, that's for sure not. I mean, Rabbi said not.
So I would like to point out, Rabbi Nusset, tell me if you would agree. The Ramah holds that Stem Yainam is Asr Bahana. So according to the Ramah, I mean the Beis Yosef, the Mechaber.
The Mechaber is old no matter what, right? He's very Mechaber.
So if a Sfardi is not allowed to, under any circumstances, gift a bottle of wine, and if he was given a bottle of wine, he would just have to throw it in the garbage and not re-gift it, right?
Right.
Now, the Ramah, which is the Ashkenazim, is more Mekil. He says, V'yesh Mekilim, but he says, it's your Shemayim should be Machmer, because he Nemzon, like the Paiskim, holds. That he says either Hefsed Merubi, but he says he brings Yesh Mekilim, and then he says, but you should be back there. But the Pesche Tshuva, I'm just saying, the Pesche Tshuva does bring, and the Darki Tshuva bring, that they allow Hana from Stam Yenam because they believe that it's a sex fake, that it's a suffix, whether we hold that there's, that they're even over the Avoy the Zara Bizmana there. And it's a suffix whether, So as a lechatchila, you certainly do it. But if you got it, the pashtus, it wouldn't be such a bad thing to re-gift it. Would you agree with that?
Well, I see the Pesach Tshuva over there is quoting the Levush Esrad. He happens to be that he's only quoting it in part. If you actually look inside the Levush Esrad, he's talking about people that are, that's their livelihood. Their business is to deal with Stam Yenim. So therefore, that's his definition or his scenario of Hefsed Merubah. That's his business. That's his panosa. So it's different. By us, that's not really the case. You know, you happen to have gotten a nice bottle of wine. It's not going to make a difference in your panosa whether you're to gift it further or not. So it's not a pure similarity to the case of the Levush Esrad. Although it's true that when the Pesach Tshuva quotes it, he doesn't mention that fact. But if you look inside, that's what it says.
So let me ask you another question. So now, you want to send a basket from, one of these big basket companies to a gift. And it has in it trace of meat. It has meat, it has cheese, and you send a gift to a guy.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, the Shulchan Aruch says that you're not allowed to do schayra with non-kosher items, that things that are asa lachatchila, which would seem to assume that it would be problematic. Yeah. But the question would be is that both the Taz and the Shach certainly says that it's because maybe you're going to eat from it. And the question would be is that these are things that are so removed. I mean, you never see it. You never even see it. It's an internet button you push. It goes from source A to source B. You never touched it. You never saw it. Would you say that in these situations, the chashis of Dilma Asi Lamechomine, which is the reason that certainly the Shach and the Taz seems to say would be an Egeya Bizmana there.
No, and Lamai said it's not, because this is the Machlekes in the Rishonim, what the Isser of Schayr is all about. There are some who say that it's all built on Shem Yovel Lechel Menu. But Lamai said, the Gemara doesn't say that. Yeah, it's Machlekes Rashba and Tosfos, and the Achrayim bring it both ways. But we're Machner that it might be a straight Isser Deraisa, and because it's learned from the Pasuk, the Gemara of Sochim, and therefore that's not something that you can rely on. And the only time that we sometimes rely on that, and again, that's only some Paiskim, is if you're a broker. In other words, if the food never actually comes into your possession, but you just broker between a buyer and a seller, and it's not actually in your possession at all, some place can Rav Shlomo Kluger and others are making in such a case, because that means it was never in your rishus. You're just like a middleman. But otherwise, we do not allow that, and it's considered schayer. By a broker, the part of the argument is that it's never really yours, because you're just brokering between two people.
Okay. Sure. Now, let's say somebody received a gift like that. They received a big basket, comes from them, from some gracious supplier. It has in it all kinds of trade things. Can you give that to your maid or to your co-worker?
Yeah, you could re-gift that. You could re-gift that if it's anything which is only usher b'schayra, but not usher b'ano. Now, you have to clarify. Usher b'ano means that you can't have any benefits from it whatsoever. Usher b'schayra means that you can't do business with it, but you could have other types of benefit. So, and the halacha is also, whatever is only usher b'schayra, if it happens to fall into your hands, you're allowed to get rid of it. You're not required to throw it out. If it's usher b'ano, then you have to get rid of it because you can't benefit. But if it's just that you came to business with it, we say that if it falls into your hands without you acquiring it, then you may get rid of it further. You may give it, you may sell it. You're allowed to actually benefit from it because it's not also about, no, it's only also the schayer. If it fell into your hands, it's not considered as a business deal, and therefore you're allowed to do it. So in your case, the gift came to you unsolicited, and now it's misdaming to you. It happens to fall into your hands. You're allowed to sell it. You're allowed to gift it. You're allowed to give it to anybody that will appreciate it and give you tevas. I know all that is mutter.
Okay, and
but you got to be careful. You got to be careful that there's no bas v'chalav in there. If there's bas v'chalav or there's a chavetz the Pesach, anything which is mamish also by law, that heter will not apply.
Right. Now, what about you want to send an assortment of non-kosher cheeses to a non-Jew as a gift?
There's no issur chayr on non-kosher cheese because the whole issur of non-kosher cheese is midrabanan, and the issur chayr is only on foods which are usher to eat midraisa, like chicken or meat, nevelas, etc. But anything which is only usher midrabanan, even though of course you can't eat it, but there's no issur chayr on it. There's no issur in the business of it. So that'll be
okay. Talk about holiday parties. What? Give us some guidance. What are you or are you not allowed to do?
Well, the Shiva's Rambam is it's, even if it's in a Jew's home, if it's Roy Goyim, it's Osir. That's even worse. But most of these parties will be in a Goyish venue.
Right.
And when it comes to alcoholic beverages, we're certainly machmer not to drink alcohol amongst Goyim in their venue. I mean, the place can struggle with this, but... One certainly should be machmir not to have an alcohol drink in a goyish venue. Whether or not it also applies in a Jew's home, Ravashi actually is machmir in the end, but I don't know how that's accepted. But in a goyish venue, yeah, be machmir.
Even though the Ramah is mekel, right? By beer, yeah. He's talking about by beer.
By beer, right? And
the only shita that's machmir is the Rambam, and we can't, of the Rishonim, and. They don't know of a makor for the Shita Sarambam.
Right.
You think that, you should be machmir for the Rambam. You don't stop rolling the Shulchan Aruch.
Right. Okay. The is machmir. It's not clear exactly. This is a Shnai Sugya. You're right. This is not well understood exactly. But the Ramesh and this Truva is very machmir about it.
Okay.
I can tell you 100% that's accepted worldwide. And I guess somebody who's making this has room to be making. But, the Chachma Sadeh already talks about this and very critical of the people who engage in that behavior.
I mean, all the Hasidic stories talk about somebody went to a kretschmer and made a l'chaim. So I guess we're assuming that was a Jewish kretschmer only.
No, that's a business. It's different. It's not, you're not partying with them. The issue is al-chasnus. This is because, I don't know. It's a tough. See, the Ramah doesn't discuss wine. The Ramah discusses Sheikha Shal Dvash, Tvua. We're not exactly 100% sure, if he's talking about that.
The Gemara doesn't discuss wine. He's only quoting the Gemara, and the Gemara doesn't discuss wine.
Right. So I'm saying, we don't know. But and the Ramah is questionable if we rely on the Ramah or not. The Chacham Sadam says anybody has a Reach Torah, keep away from this. Don't do it. So.
Yeah, but I believe he also
highly
says
undercommended, that's for sure.
But he also says you shouldn't have a coffee in a coffee shop.
The Gra and the Prichados, they say that coffee and tea is not included. And that's the minig, that's for sure. When it comes to alcoholic beverages, there is no clear minig, and you can't really fault somebody who's making it. You can't say there's against Shulchan Aruch, but he's against the Chachmas Adam, who says that nowadays we should keep away from that, and it causes all kinds of problems, and we know that to be true. Anybody who goes to a bar is not the kind of a person that you want to really hang around with.
No. Except, you know, even though by dating, guys go to where they give drinks.
Yeah, but now, alcoholic drinks. People buy alcoholic drinks. I'm not aware. Not in my days. I don't know. Maybe things have changed.
I understand that, but they're going. You know the Makar, by the way, on dates to go to a lounge.
Yeah.
It's the Makar is from Eliezer, Met Rizka, where the Behemoths go to drink.
Well, that's agreed upon by all. Coffee and tea and soft beverages, we're not mad about that at all. That's agreed upon by all price groups.
Let me move on to accepting holiday gifts. The Turim Chayshin Mishpat. I don't think anybody, I'll bet you nobody ever asked you this question. The Turim Chayshin Mishpat and Reish Mem Tess and Hochas Matana Mechila brings that Midas HaChassidus Shaloi Lekabel Matana Mishum Adam El Lefkoyach Bashem. It's a tour.
Right.
The Beis Yosef says, brings it to Gemara Reish Kedushin. What about, have you ever seen somebody say, I will not accept a gift? And it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch to Midas, the Shulchan Aruch brings it to Midas Chassidus Shaloyla Kabal Matana. Have you seen people say, I won't give me a holiday gift, I don't accept gifts because it's Sayyidina Matana?
Of course. Of course there's such people. Yeah. A lot of people don't accept gifts. Sayyidina Matana Siyachia. It's not a novel idea. It's not required from anybody. To me, this procedure, there are many people who won't accept anything from anybody. Many people. You know, G'daylim, Sadiqim, Midas Chassidus. It's not for your average person because it's not real. But there's a lot of people out there who just don't want to benefit from anybody for any reason. And it used to be that the big Chassidus or others would not accept anything from anybody, only for Tzedakah. There's a lot of things like that. There are many people on that Madrega.
The Garlitz Arav, the son of the very sharp, mm-hmm. he's the son of the son, I think the fourth son. Mm-hmm. He once said, he said, the first tzaddik who they gave him a matbeya, satam durchgelechev et ahant, it burned a hole in his hand. He said, on alle seine einiglich kenne nicht anfüllen der Lach. I'm just saying over a mimer of Wizger from the Garlitz Arav. What about, let's talk about other holidays, Valentine's Day. Can somebody, you know, buy his kala box of chocolates on Valentine's Day?
Listen, I don't know the origin of Valentine's Day. It doesn't sound very Jewish, that's for sure. But if you bedavka bind her it to her because it's Valentine's Day, that is really chukas akum. Whether somebody is there or not, I don't know. But it's goyish, certainly. So if you want to buy her a box of chocolates, why can't you buy it to her the day after Valentine's Day? Why are you Bedafka buying it on Valentine's Day? Bedafka, you're associating yourself with the Gershom Minig.
Okay. So let me ask you another question. A 4th of July barbecue, right? I mean, this is...
That's not Goyish. That's not Goyish. That's celebrating Independence Day. It's not a chukas ha'akam. It's a holiday. It's a holiday to celebrate. It's not a Goyish thing. It's secular, maybe, but it's not Goyish. Those are two different things. There's nothing holy about it, but it's not doing it because the goyim are doing it. It's the citizens of this country are celebrating our independence. That in itself is not chukas ha'akum.
You see that as different than Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving, you know, is a whole debate. Ramesh had various ways of dealing with Thanksgiving. Sometimes he was more machmer, sometimes he was a little more mekel. There are different ways of understanding, because you have to know the origin of Thanksgiving, what the pilgrims, you know, there's a lot of history that you have to be aware of. I don't know exactly if it's all documented. But if a person sits down only on Thanksgiving to thank Hashem because today's Thanksgiving, that is also chukas ha'akum. You're doing it because the goyim are doing it today. Why is that? Why should that be the time that you're doing it?
How would it be different than July 4th, let's say. Goyim created July 4th. I mean, it was only Goyim then, I imagine.
It's a little different. You're right. The Ramesh himself struggles with it, and he goes back and forth. He, The Meister writes five or six different tshuvas about Thanksgiving, and it doesn't always say the same thing. And he himself tries to clear it up, and it remains unclear. So you're right. Some people, I think it depends. If you're doing it because you're an American, that's one thing. So you're a citizen of America. So this is what Americans do. But if you're doing it because it's a St. Valentine's Day has a religious aspect to it. So if you're doing it for the religiosity of it, it's a problem. If you're doing it because this is what Americans do, okay, this is what Americans do. But you know what? It's a thin point. It could be debated. It's not 100% clear.
Could you wish your admin Merry Xmas or not?
Well, you should not use the word. You know, you can say happy holidays, season's greetings. That's okay. Hanukkah is the same season, Baruch Hashem. But I wouldn't express the word because that could be Shem HaBerezara.
Yeah.
Which whether Christianity is HaBerezara, Catholics, Protestants, you don't have to get involved in all that. You just avoid it. And, you know.
But Happy New Year would be okay.
Happy New Year is okay. Happy New Year is a secular day.
Well, Rabbi Neustadt, thank you very much for your time. As always, it's an honor to have you on with us.
Thank you so much. Have a good night.
Joining us is Ralph Rafal Hertzka, as I know him from Yeshiva. I remember in Yeshiva, nobody ever contemplated Kenai Nahara, how successful he would be and how much tzedakah he would do and how many mice and tovim. He's the CEO of Meridian. I think it's maybe the largest privately held mortgage company in the United States. He'll correct me if I'm wrong. I think 2 years ago he said they did over $50 billion. Correct me on that if I'm wrong. Welcome, Ralph.
Thank you, David. Thank you for mentioning Yeshiva. And thank you for mentioning that no one anticipated. And I'm very grateful to the Eberster for success. And it's nice to say hello. And yes, you're accurate. We are, Baruch Hashem, the largest privately held mortgage company. We haven't hit $50 billion yet, but 45, 44, 45. So it's pretty close. So it's my pleasure to join you this evening.
So, Ralph, a lot of the young guys in business, they recognize that relationships are very important. And gift-giving, parties, dinners are very important for relationships. Now, you're famous for your relationships. I know your relationships with banks. You told me this banker already for 25 years I've been having dinner with him, with the other one. So your sort of relationships is an area where you're the marber of Ashi of relationships. Can you give the young guys listening some advice on gift-giving, parties, how to do it in a kosher way as a business person, as an expert in this field?
Sure. So first of all, I take it as a compliment that I'm the master of relationships and pride myself on that. And I think it's one of the big strengths of Meridian that we're very relationship-oriented. And we have relationships with our clients, with our banks, with our employees, and with everyone that we come across. And while you're asking about specifically dinners and gifts in holiday season, we encourage, you know, social interaction throughout the year, whether it's events, charity events that we actually host several a year. This year, unfortunately, with COVID, we couldn't. We host golf outings for charity, and we host other things, and we attend many of our colleagues and bankers that do that. But we believe that it's really important to have social interaction with our clients and with our bankers, and we're extremely sensitive to it. We really are very careful to adhere to rules. Banks have very specific rules, whether it's to buying gifts and limitations or going to games or doing other things. There are very clear limits, and you never want to be in a position where you violated them. And I think that while they're all the most they're important, they're not the most important. It's just part of a relationship. And I can honestly tell you, as a firm person in business for 35 years, many of my relationships that are with non-Jews, the relationships are so close that I remember one time sitting in my office at 3:00 and the banker saying to me, "Ralph, candlelighting is at 4:14. Why are you still in the office?" So I think it's when you're very careful in everything that you're doing and you're demonstrating that you adhere to a higher authority in anything that is out there, you make not just a Kiddush Hashem, they respect you for it. And I think it's something that you will feel, every individual will feel good. David, you built an amazing business, and even as successful as you are, you're humble about it. I know you don't like talking about it. And I've actually met banks and coming across, so they said, I lent money to David Lichtenstein, and he paid back every penny, even though the deals didn't go well. And I will always lend him money. And he's a dear friend of mine, even though I sat on the opposite side of the table. And those are things that, you know, don't just start with dinners. They don't end with dinners. It's a whole relationship. And I think it's really, really, really important that people do it well. You know, I can tell you as a firm, I don't anymore go to non-kosher restaurants. In the early days, you know, if I had a closing dinner and other things, I would try to attend. But I've made it a point not to. And one of my famous stories, I was at a conference and I walked into a restaurant. And it was a non-kosher restaurant. I wasn't eating. I was just having some drink. And I got a text from the chief credit officer from one of the major banks. He goes, "Busted, Ralph, what are you doing in a non-kosher restaurant?" So I think it's something that if you set rules and people respect you for what they are, for who you are and what they are, you will be able to follow those rules and still have a successful outcome.
So let's talk about gift giving. It's holiday season. What would you advise a young budding businessman? How should he be, you know, what changes during holiday season? What should he be doing? How should he be thinking? Give us 101 in holiday, you know, gift giving.
So I always find what's really nice is you sometimes have a relationship with two people in an office, but there's really multiple people there. And we send and baskets of fruit, baskets of platters of cookies. We've actually delivered lunches to certain institutions, and we include everyone. And when you're inclusive, people feel good about it, and the senior people also are proud that their relationship included everyone. That's really, you know, on the food side. As far as gifts, we've made it a tradition of picking something. This year, actually, I think we hit it out of the park. We had a travel back oven set that we sent out to clients and to bankers, and it's been a big hit, especially with COVID. But I got an amazing gift from a law firm. It was actually one of the top law firms in the city that host one of the largest events every year. They couldn't do it this year. So they had an artist do a picture of it, and then they created a puzzle out of it, and they sent it to everyone. And it was a fabulous idea and a fabulous gift. So I think you don't have to go overboard. There are very strict restrictions as far as, you know, buyers. And if you're in the apparel business, the buyers can only, you know, get gifts that are less than X, I think it's $100 for sure in the banking side. And as long as you adhere to that, there are some really interesting things that you can get people. And if you put your logo on it, then people appreciate it. You put on personal names, it's always important. And just do it in a nice way, get it delivered to the office. And I think people really, it means a lot to people. It recognizes who they are. But, you know, it's like one banker once said to me, and I got a beautiful gift from this client, and it was really thoughtful, but he totally didn't realize that he was ruining my holiday by making me do something, you know, on the eve of my holiday. So you got to be sensitive, not just to the gift you're sending, but also to the time of the year that, you know, Thanksgiving afternoon is a very important day to a lot of people. I don't mean Thanksgiving, I mean the eve of Thanksgiving. And just make sure that, you know, you respect that.
And as far as attending parties, like at Meridian, do the guys go to, like, these big holiday parties that are thrown by the law firms and the brokerages and the title companies? What do you advise the younger people to do?
We
talk about the firm of guys who work there.
So again, I will never force someone to go. You know, most of the parties in New York City will have kosher food, so they expect people to come that are kosher. But I encourage people to go, and I say, you know, go, you know, meet people, socialize. It's a good environment. it's a way of also showing, you know, gratitude to whoever's hosting the party, and you really get to meet clients, and you meet people in a social setting. It's just, it's encouraged. It's very, you know, conducive to new business. And, you know, we are constantly, you know, monitoring who's having events, were we invited, who's going to it. And, you know, this year I don't do it, but there's some nights in December that I'm going to 5 or 6 or 7 parties. And I will tell you, some of the parties go out of the way to serve kosher. There's multiple that are full kosher parties, and doesn't mean that the host is kosher and is kosher, but they're sensitive to a lot of, you know, the kosher requirements, and they've made many of those parties kosher. You go to the Fleet Frank party, there's a huge amount of from people there, and there always a very nice amount of kosher food.
Have you found, you know, that these parties are sort of, you know, do they get risque? Do they get, in your experience, like most of the professional parties, or like do they stay professional?
Totally professional. Totally professional. They start at 5:30, 6 o'clock. They go till 9, 10. People are in and out. Totally professional. There is nothing inappropriate that I have seen in all my years of holiday parties.
Okay. Now, I noticed that you always, there's pictures of you always in this paper and that paper, these events, and you always wear a yarmulke. Have you found it at all to be a handicap?
I have not. And I can tell you one of my famous stories that I share with many of the times that I go around on college campuses, and I talk to, you know, many of the college students that are embarking on careers. So it was probably 20 some odd years ago. I closed a loan for a client, and he invited me to his country club, which was in California. It was actually a famous place called Mar-a-Lago. We all know about it now. And he invited me to the club, and he said to me, "Please come for dinner." I said, "I'm kosher. I can't come for dinner." He says, "Will you come for dessert?" I said, "Sure, I'll come at the end of the evening." I showed up, and walking in there was, you know, Christmas time. I felt maybe I would make him uncomfortable. I would be uncomfortable. So I actually took my yarmulke off one of the few times. And I walked in and asked what was there, and he says, "Ralph, where's your kippah?" I was telling one of my friends about this young guy, very successful, is going to come in, never takes off his kippah, put it back on, and never take it off. And I can honestly from that day on, you know, and Ashley is just a great friend. He's in the mid-80s, a very substantial owner. And I always tell him, I said, "Ashley, the hundreds of people that are wearing yarmulkes, I actually counseled a recent student that got a job at one of the top consulting firms. And he said to me, 'What do I do about my yarmulke?' And I said, 'Listen, from the great schools you're in, and you wore it on the interview, I think you can wear it.' And he actually told me, he says, 'My office is glass, and one of the first weekends in the winter, I actually, you know, ran out and left late, and I had to end up walking home. And my boss came into me the next Friday and said, 'I heard you had to walk home last week. Make sure you leave enough time this week.' And he said, 'Ralph, I got to tell you, if I wasn't sitting in my glass office with my yarmulke, I don't think he would have said that.'" Now, I will tell you, we're a little spoiled because we're in New York, so New York is used to it. But I've gone around the country and to conferences, and you see yarmulkes. But I always tell my people, if you're wearing a yarmulke and the elevator opens up and you push your way in and you cut off 9 people and you're talking on the phone during the elevator and you're rude, then you're defeating the purpose of wearing a yarmulke. So I think, when you're wearing the yarmulke, you need to make sure that you realize that, because people will look and say, you know, he was disrespectful, or on the contrary, he was respectful, and he let us off the elevator first, was polite to the women in the elevator. So I think it's something that, you know, you just got to be very sensitive to.
Do you feel, Ralph, a sense of responsibility as one of the more successful you know, senior sort of representatives in the business world, do you feel a sense of responsibility, like in your behavior, saying, look, I am a yeshiva boy. We were born, we go to yeshiva, hopefully we die as yeshiva bachrim, and therefore I have to represent us. When I walk in, I am a representative of a certain set of values. Do you feel that way?
I feel, yeshiva was a long time ago, so I'm not sure. I look at myself today as a yeshiva boy, but I look at myself as a successful, Orthodox Jew in business that can make a Kiddush Hashem by doing it right. And I think the firm has proven that over many, 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 many years. And I always feel a sense of responsibility of that. And I must tell you, I've been to many conferences and met many firm guys from conferences, and I'm impressed. I'm impressed because people do feel and do act with a certain sensitivity that they know that, if you don't do it right. But I 100% constantly feel that responsibility, and not just in conferences, in every aspect of everything that goes on in the firm and in my personal, interaction with clients and banks and everyone else.
Ralph, thank you very much for your time. I know you're about to get on a plane. I appreciate that you set aside this time for us.
My pleasure, and I want to wish, everyone hatzlacha and good luck in their business endeavors. And, I'll leave you with one thing. We work very hard at Meridian, and we often do very well. And I have one philosophy that I always like to share. As long as you work hard and you do your shtadlus, then it's really not in our hands. And my guys know, if we work hard and we lose a deal, I say it's b'shet. If we neglect it and we never got an opportunity, then I say, we didn't do our job. So if I can share something with everyone, as long as you go along with that mindset, it's comforting to know. And everyone should have tremendous hatzlacha. And you, David, I think what you do in so many aspects, I know you don't like to be recognized, but it's truly a kiddush Hashem. Hashem should continue to grant you hatzlacha and the ability to help so many people quietly. Hatzlacha Rabbah.
Thank you very much. Kol tov v'yarechol.
Thank you.
Joining us from Yerushalayim is Rabbi Ari Wasserman, who's uniquely suited to discuss this topic for a number of reasons. He's written two svarim, one called Making It Work, that's for men in the workplace, Making It All Work for women in the workplace. He's also written five svarim in Lashon Kodesh. He's also 20 years actually worked in the workplace. So he has hands-on experience, he knows what holiday parties are like, he knows what the secular workplace worked at one of the top law firms in the world. Welcome, Rabbi Ari.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you, David.
So let's talk about it. You have a job, you're an attorney, or whatever field you're in, and you've been invited to the holiday party. It's on December 15th, and the firm sent out a letter. They're doing a holiday party, and everybody should come. What are some of the issues, and how do we deal with them? Are you allowed?
All right. All right, very good question. So, initially I would say just expect the unexpected, because absolutely anything can come up. I'm happy to discuss some of the more common issues that come up, but let me just mention one thing that happened to me that was unexpected. I was in senior management of a company, and I was actually involved in planning the holiday party. It wasn't an Xmas party, it was a holiday party. And I, as the general counsel and executive vice president of the company, I said, we're not having alcohol because I didn't want people drinking and then getting in car accidents afterward and incurring the liability. So I was pretty fairly confident. We had arranged kosher food and everything. In the middle of all the great planning in the event, a woman gets up and starts singing on the microphone. So expect the unexpected. Even being involved in organizing the event, I had to sneak out quickly because of that. So that's an initial point. And I think I just want to say one additional initial point before going through some of the issues is this applies to everyone. You don't have to be working in investment banking in Goldman Sachs or a consultant at Deloitte. I'm in touch with a rabbi, Rabbi Friedman, who runs an organization called Doehu. They send out now 5,000 emails a day talking about workplace challenges. He's actually part of the Square Hasidus in Borough Park, and the Posek for Doe, who is this Rav Michal Steinmetz Shlita, he's the Dayan of the Kila Square. And we compare notes often, and the Rav Michal Steinmetz is getting flooded right now with the issue that you are talking about. Holiday parties, gift giving, these are the same questions. And he is answering the questions for the Hasidic world, and they are experiencing the same thing. So to get into it, you said, can you go? So it depends what type of party it is. Is it a holiday party? Is it an employee appreciation party? Or is it an Xmas party? Because if it's an Xmas party, then you cannot go. Now truth be told, if they just happen to call it an Xmas party, but that's it. I have a niece who she went to MIT in engineering, and she was working at a large software development company, and they had what was called an Xmas party, but they had no connections to Xmas. They were just having a party, like an employee appreciation party. So that very well may not be what we're talking about, but if you have something that is really an Xmas party, and I'll give you an example. My wife was working at a small financial valuation company in downtown Los Angeles. She was the only Jew there. And their holiday party, their Xmas party, was actually a gift swap under the Xmas tree. And everyone was expected to come and swap a gift with somebody else drinking eggnog under the tree. And that is certainly a problem of chukas agoyim. We didn't know what to do. This is 20 years ago. I called Rav Hershel Schachter, and he says, of course, you can't go. So my wife conveniently made a doctor appointment at that time and was not able to attend. So when it comes to can you go, for the most part, if it's employee appreciation, if it's a holiday party, you can go. But then the next question is, so what can you do there? Also, when it comes to can you go, if there's mixed dancing, certainly for a man, you can't be inside when there's mixed dancing. So that would be another thing that you have to think about. Well, when it comes to what can you do there, so how about drinking with non-Jews? That's a big issue. There's a gzeira of Chazal and the Talmud Bavli. It's not a Mishnah. It's instituted a decree by the Amoraim about Sheikhar Shal Akum. It's a Gemara Avodah Zarah. And why did they usher? The Gemara asked, why did Chazal usher Sheikhar Shal Ovdei Kochavim? So the main reason is Mishum Chasnus, because literally we may get intermarried, but the Rambam in his Perusha Mishnayah says Mishum Chasnus doesn't literally mean you're only going to get married, but he says that we have to have a distance from them. We can't get too involved and can't associate with non-Jewish ways, because it's going to rub off on us. So it's promiscuity, it's the environment, it's everything that thing that comes along with drinking with the non-Jews is problematic. So drinking with non-Jews, indeed, based on that Gemara, is problematic. It happens to be that there is a machlokus between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah as to what type of alcoholic beverages are prohibited. The Shulchan Aruch is of the view kol sheichar shel kutim, all types of alcoholic beverages are prohibited to be drunk with non-Jews, but the Ramah brings a more lenient view that yesh matirim b'sheichar shel dvash utfuah. If it's honey-based or if it's grain-based, you can be lenient. He says that in the Nohegan, the custom, the practice in Ashkenazic lands is to be lenient. But I need to say that there are many Achronim, even Ashkenazic Achronim, that disagree with this Ramah. The Gra brings a Beis Yosef that says everyone disagrees with this Tishita, the Shita, not necessarily the Ramah. The Ramah is quoting some Rishonim, and the Beis Yosef says that everyone disagrees with this, and the Pri Chadash says every Posek disagrees with this, and I think that should be the practice out there, is no drinking with non-Jews.
So let me just go back, before you go back, Rav. So there are two different issues. There's one issue is that the Shulchan Aruch says we're not allowed to go to a wedding that a guy is making for his family, right?
Yeah, but that's eating.
That's eating.
That's not specifically alcoholic beverages.
That's anything. Eating, right? Even if he says if you bring your own food, you're not allowed to
even
do that.
Even if you bring your own food, you have your own waiter, you have your own table.
Waiter. Doesn't matter, right? And nobody
doesn't matter.
I mean,
no, it's Paskin and Shulchan Aruch. It's possible, but that is eating at a goyish wedding. At a goyish wedding.
Right.
Now,
which
the levush expands
Rabbi.
It. So the levush, what you're talking about is a wedding in particular, but the levush expands it. And he says it's not only limited to weddings. He expands it to lesudas mishta shel simcha kegon chasnus ben obito. So he expands it to a party of simcha, similar to a wedding, but it's lav dafka based on the levush wedding. So this would apply to holiday parties as well. So what you're getting at here is we could have not only an isser of drinking, but we could also, at least based on the levush, and the Mishnah Halachos brings this as well, if it's just a party, indeed there can be a problem of eating as well.
Even though he says the levush also does finish off, he says stam kriya mash b'kashikra to lesudas mishter shall simcha and chasas for everything aval shar sudei shall darki shalay muta. I would imagine that a company holiday party would fall into shar sudei shall darki shalay. Would you agree?
I think it depends. I think it depends, and this is a really important point because you're going to have certain company events that it's important to go to. It's going to be important maybe to your boss or your coworkers, and it could also negatively impact your ability to progress and get a raise if you're going to be a pariah and not attend any events. So it could definitely be because of Darkei Shalom or so to avoid Eva, to avoid animosity with coworkers and your boss. On the other hand, there's certain parties that are just parties. You know, I got an email from someone who works at the largest consulting firm in the world, and his team wanted him to join them on their happy hour on Thursday nights. That's just partying. That's not Mishum Darkei Shalom and Eva. They're just going out to get drunk.
Well, let's go through that exact case. The Shulchan Aruch brings Mishta of Bnei Ubitei, and the Gemara, certainly Rashi, seems to imply it's because of they were makrav karbanis avodah zarah, which is why 30 days, even a year, he's still makrav, etc. So are some paiskim machmir? The answer is yes. But it's certainly not brought in Shulchan Aruch, right? And
are you talking about the Isser of eating?
The Isser of eating. Now, the issue of drinking, which you mentioned before, which the Rambam brings in Hilchos Machalos Asuras, lo yishta adam b'mesiba shalakam. In Rambam says, even if it's yayin mevushel, right? Even if you bring your own wine or your own drink, Rambam says you're not allowed to, unless he says, roiv ha-mesiba yisrael mutta, which, by the way, could happen at a big law firm in New York. Could be a friar law firm, and most of the lawyers are Jewish for that matter. And then the Rambam says, be it beer is ofta. But interestingly, as you noted before, the Shulchan Aruch does not bring this halacha. And most of the Paiskim Amatzmiya, they said, it's not a Gemara. Where did the Rambam get this from? And nobody knows where the Rambam got it from. There are some suppositions where he got it from. The Lashon of the Arachayim is, the Pretori says, this is a glash Lashon. Mesiba Aser Kedas the Rambam. He says, Lo Noida Mekoimai, the Shas. He says the Vaishyasiv Kastav, Esher Dematza Brisa, the Asra, maybe the Rambam had some Brisa that we don't have, but it is not brought into Shulchan Aruch for that reason. So even though there's Makim to be Machmir, like you said, like the Prechadish of Machmir, but it's the Shulchan Aruch is clearly if somebody wants to go to a party and drink wine, not a chasana, there's no, the Shulchan Aruch does not ask for it. That would be, is that fair to say?
No, he wouldn't ask for the eating. He would ask for the drinking. That's kol sheicher shalakum. It's if you're there, kuf yudal tzifalef.
Rabbi Wasserman is right. Drinking by a holiday party, according to the Beis Yosef, would be us. And I know we have many Spardish listeners who come from, they know they like the Beis Yosef, is extremely machmir. And the Rama says, we are noig to be mekel, so an Ashkenazi could be simach on the Ramah. Now the Prechadash argues on argues on the Ramah, but the he was Italian Sardi the Prechadash, but the Ashkenazim are Mekel. And by the way, the Prechadash who's Machmir says you're not even allowed to go to a Starbucks. He says even to a coffee house. The Prechadash is so it is a very wide ranging kumra.
Yeah. No, I do want to say on this point, because I don't want to leave it that Ashkenazi can be lenient. The first draft of the book, that when I put out the first publication of Making It Work, I wrote about this topic, and I wrote as follows. I said, practically speaking, we do not follow the more lenient ruling on this issue. And I said that there are achronim amongst them, even the Ashkenazim, that disagree, like the Biur HaGra, as you mentioned, the Pri Chadash, as you mentioned. And I got called on it. I get the most comments on this statement. And one of my Rabbanim from Los Angeles, who wound up being Chavrusas for a number of years, he sent me an email saying, how can you disregard the Ramah? And that's the psak of the Ramah. So he was right indeed, and I responded to him. I was blurring, the difference, incorrectly, the difference between the halacha and what should be done. And the halacha is, the Ramah is lenient. And the halacha
only
is that,
and I want to mention again,
only for Ashkenazim, right? Yeah. Only for Ashkenazim. But even then, many Ashkenazic achronim disagree. And I will say, there's an amazing quote that I once heard a posek say. It wasn't in this context at all. But he said as follows about a different issue. He said, even if it's mutter, it's usser. And I think the same thing applies when it comes to drinking. There's no reason for it in the workplace. If you want to drink, have another l'chaim over Shabbos at home. But it's not beneficial. It's very detrimental. And terrible things happen. I know of stories. I've verified stories of people that have gotten drunk. And unfortunately, it led to terrible things that very night. So I got to say, even if it's mutter. The story, a man who wound up in bed with two women. I know a story of, and I verified this with the Rav. I verified with the Rav who told it. She, a woman who never used to go to parties, and a coworker was leaving. She was working with this coworker for many years, and she decided she had to go to the party, to the goodbye party, and she was pressured into having a drink, and she woke up the next morning with a coworker, and she was an Ashes Cohen, her husband was a Cohen. So what do you do? What do you do? So unfortunately, these things happen regularly. So I did get an email once from somebody who's working for a software company, and he said, I need a drink to be able to associate with people. I have a difficult time interacting with the non-Jews in a social area, and it's very difficult for me. And can I have at least a beer? And the answer, I said, you shouldn't be drinking. You know, you want to look, strictly speaking, at the Ramah. You know, he's lenient because it's grain-based, not all drinks by the Ramah. But even if it's mutter, you shouldn't do it. It's not a wise idea, because things do happen. And I would say that it's important. We always feel concerned. We look different. We're concerned that we're doing different than other people. And that's a good thing. That's a positive thing. We are different from other people. And Chazal instituted all of these decrees for us to be able to establish that we are different. We act different. We have to be different. We should view ourselves as differently. And indeed, that's a positive thing, not a negative thing, that we feel different from everyone else in the workplace.
Okay. So again, I just want to get the halacha right. The Ramah is Mekel. The Chachmas Adam, who was a major Ashkenazi Paisek, disagrees with the Ramah. He really says sort of what you're saying. He says, let me read his Lashon. It happens, people do it because they think it's Mutta, but Kamel Kulkulim, and then he adds on, even hanging out in coffee shops, in fact, Lishtes Kava, Im Chalav, Shu Isra Gama, so you're saying it's, even if it's mutter, you're treading on thin ice, and especially people who don't know how to drink and have never drunk, like this woman you're discussing, and it probably went right to her head. So it may be mutter, but regardless, it's walking on very thin ice. Is that an appropriate way to say that, or would you say it's stronger than that?
I'm playing with fire.
Okay, you're playing with fire. Okay. And then I heard this story from I don't want to reveal his name, but he called me up. He's a very esteemed business person. And he said, whenever they have, like, guy and they know, sort of, they call me. They said, David, we have a worker. He got stoned by a holiday party. He was totally drunk. I have to say stoned, because when I grew up, it meant one thing. Totally drunk. And we actually had to send him, we had to call, like, an EMT. And we opened his shirt, and he's wearing all kinds of strings. Do you know what that means?
Sorry.
I said, yes. So you could end up with Chil Hashem issues, like you're the person who's running out to Mincha, doing this, and then suddenly by a party, and Nichtas Yayin, Yatzah Said, all kinds of, people when they drink and act, inhibition goes away, right? Like the Gemara says, Kol HaNoisin Einav B'Koisei, Kol HaOilam Doimalei K'Mishar. inhibition is dropped. So I think that there's an element of Chilul Hashem that is not discussed necessarily in these Paiskim, but I know in the real world can become an issue. And I sort of think, like, you know, holding out with Tzura as a Ben Torah, as a Yeshiva Bachar, as a Bas, you know, a Beis Yaakov girl, that's really important, not to lose that Tzura. But that's not a halachic issue, that's a shkafic issue. So let's continue to the next topic that we wanted to discuss. So you're invited to, you're working on an M&A deal, or whatever the case is, you're trying to sell a piece of software, and you're invited to a non-kosher restaurant. Now, we understand nobody here is going to be eating, you know, a shrimp at a non-kosher restaurant, but, you know, you could order, you know, say, look, you know, I'm vegetarian or this or that, so can I just have, you know, some, or I'm on a diet, give me some apple and orange, give me some. Is there an issue with going into a non-kosher restaurant and just saying, look, you know, this happens to me all the time, and I just say, look, I have different dietary rules, so I don't, but are you allowed to enter into the restaurant? That's the question. What would you say?
Right, so it's a question of Mara Sayin, and Rav Moshe talked about it in Egros Moshe 50 plus years ago, and back then when it wasn't as common that somebody from would go into a treif restaurant, he was for the most part machmir, but he gave certain requirements to permit it if it's going to cause a large financial loss and you have no other option, and if you're going to go in, you have to inform the people on the outside why you're going in. I had this situation when I was working during law school down in Century City in Los Angeles, and I had a required lunch in a restaurant called Delmonico's, which was on Pico Boulevard. Pico Boulevard is the most Jewish street outside of New York, and across the street was a restaurant called Delmonico's, and the whole front window was glass, so everyone on the street could see in, and it was a seafood restaurant. In fact, in the window, they had a tank of lobsters, and you can choose your lobster that you want, and then they take it from there and pour, you know, throw it into a pot in the kitchen. So Rav Moshe had a heter, but nowadays Rav Asher Weiss wrote on this issue, and he says that because now it's common knowledge, and that's the core issue when it comes to Mara Sayin, he says that it changes based on time, place, and circumstance, and nowadays that it's common knowledge that if you see someone who is from walking into a treif restaurant, and the facts and circumstances will verify that it's not a McDonald's he's going into, then he says that indeed you can be lenient on this. It's not a concern of Mara Sayin nowadays.
I don't know about your wife's testa, but I would say, for example, Shulchan Aruch says if you're having milk, a milk-like product with fleishik, almond milk, the only way you should do it is if you have almonds, you know, the nut next to it, so people understand you have a simen that it's almond milk, right? Most paiskim then on, even though the Shulchan Aruch paiskim this way, that is manenu, it's not negeya, because, I mean, you know, when you know, all these parva creamers and this have become so common. If you're drinking a coffee with your dinner, with your pleishik dinner, nobody's going to have even a havamina, a shemitz of a havamina, that you're drinking milk. It's understood today. There's a million different creamers. They have fake, you know, frosting that's made out of, you know, what's it called, whip that's made out of. So Mara Sayin clearly changes with the time. Right? So,
yeah, that's
I imagine Rav Asher Weiss is saying if somebody goes into Manhattan and he sees a guy with a big yarmulke sitting in a treif restaurant through the window, he understands that the guy's there with a bunch of business associates wearing ties. Now, Rav Moshe did not write this way, but you're saying Rabbi Weiss's opinion is it has the same thing as almond milk.
Yeah, and I think it's likely that Rav Moshe would even agree nowadays that it's the same, meaning when Rosha wrote, it wasn't common knowledge, but nowadays it's common knowledge. So, and this applies in a number of areas. A woman wearing a shetel, how do you know she's covering her hair? You know, it's common knowledge. If wearing, it could be wearing imitation leather shoes on Yom Kippur. You know, is that, I don't know if that's common knowledge or not.
So let me just go back, because I think there's a very important halachic point that is we should discuss here. Rav Moshe and them done for a pashtus, but many paiskim don't agree with that is, do we make up Mara Sayin? The Shulchan Aruch gives specific standards for what is Mara Sayin. I gave you an example, let's say almond milk, or let's say a Ben Chutzlar, it's working on the second day of Chol HaMoed. But let's say you're the first guy in your town to have an easy pass. It just came out. And you're driving with a few Frumma people. Could you drive through and not pay? You have to worry that they're going to say, oh, the guy's a gun if he didn't pay. You have an easy pass. So if you say Mara Sayin, you should say it should be problematic. But according to many Paiskim, and I'm talking Frizika Paiskim, Mara Sayin is not something that we could just make up. Oh, in this case, it's a Mara Sayin, but it has to be strictly the exact cases that the Shulchan. We don't make up new cases of Mara Sayin. Our emotions are not like that.
Well, that's a Pichadash. The Pichadash was of the view that if it has to be in the Gemara, it has to be in Chazal. If Chazal didn't institute a Marasayin, we can't create a Marasayin. Most poskim disagree with that Pichadash. If you look through the Rishonim and Achronim, there are numerous discussions of Marasayin that didn't exist in the Gemara. I don't think that Pichadash has been accepted.
There's other Rishonim that are much that way. I think there's Washington of the Meiri, but regardless, I just want to point out, I'm not, Reb Moshe Nemdon for a Pashtus, that wasn't the case.
Okay.
That Marasayin is very case relevant, and are you doing something that, I'll tell you, I had a story with me like a few years ago that I remember at the time afterwards, I said, you know, that I was walking on with my wife in Manhattan, and we passed by a guy begging on the street. I'm hungry. So I'm always worried when these guys say they're hungry that they're using it for drugs or alcohol. I said, what do you mean? He said, I need lunch. I didn't eat anything all day. It was dinner. So there was a restaurant. There was a store right in there. I said, what do you want? He said, I want a turkey sandwich. I said, okay. So I went inside. It was a crepe place. I bought a turkey with my yarmulke, with everything. I bought the guy a turkey sandwich. And I remember I came out, and he walked in, and he opened it up, and he said, there's no Russian dressing in here.
That's a chutzpah.
I said, okay. And I went back in, and I'm standing with Yamak. I said, can I have some Russian dressing? And a few people gave me a funny look, you know, a thing. And at the time, I said, hey, you know, this could really be a Shiloh of Marasayan, right? And this happened on more than one occasion because when people ask me for money, people are starving. So you're supposed to say Mefarnesen and the Yaakov and the Yisrael. I always try to get them something to eat. And, you know, you mentioned, by the way, that it was very funny. The guy asked for Russian dressing. I remember standing outside a restaurant once in Muncie. It was a Friday. A guy there saying, I'm hungry. So I said, I went into and there was a kosher place there. And I said, what would you like? He said, I want food. So I said, come in with me. So I brought him into the counter, and he looks at the counter guy, and he says, can I have two eggs over easy on him? But he just rattled out exactly what he wanted. And I looked at this person, and I realized this guy once had a job, and this was the breakfast he used to order every day in his thing. And he fell on bad times, but he remembers exactly what he ordered when he could afford it. It was very touching.
That's beautiful. That's sad in the pasuk. That's exactly that, to give him what he's used to. Very nice.
But this to me was exactly, according to Rav Moshe would be Asa. According to, if you know that today people understand that's not the case, would have been less problematic. I'm sorry, continue.
Possibly. I don't know if it's because it depends on the circumstances. So Rav Asher Weiss actually went to speak with him on this issue, and it's not a blanket heter to go into any treif restaurant. It still has to be that the circumstances warrant, that the observer would believe that you're going in for a business meeting. So if it was like a Subway's that you're going into or whatever type of fast food restaurant, I don't even know if Rav Asher Weiss would be matir. But the Kiddush Hashem that you made, that's terrific. So, you know, maybe that for Kiddush Hashem we'll be lenient on it.
So let's talk about some other events that happen. You know, what happens if? How do you deal with it? You're invited to a company event, and you know people are hugging each other. What do you do? You've attended these things. What's the practical answer?
Normally when people are, I mean, that's the whole style of shaking hands and hugging. There is no heter for hugging. There's no heter for certainly initiating. There's no heter for reciprocating. So when I spoke with Rav Asher Weiss on this issue, he said, karka olam, be passive if somebody reaches out to you. I actually had a non-Jewish partner in a business, and he played tackle in football college. So we had a deal that he would always go first and take all the hugs. And it worked out great for him, and it worked out great for me. So you need a pre-plan. Because you know these things are happening. Corona helps actually a lot, that people are keeping distance right now. But you have to pre-plan these things, because there's no heter to reciprocate a hug. So that indeed is a real problem.
Well, somebody once gave me an AC. He said, walk around with a glass or two in each, like with a glass of water or some tippy looking thing. And if you can even hold two, it gets, you know, like you say, and nobody's going to hug you.
We have another interesting Marasai in Shaila. At least if you're Sephardi in the Shulchan Aruch, you're not supposed to be drinking any alcohol. So if you carry a cup that looks like it's alcohol, you know, that's a possible issue. But carry something, carry a cup. And then I like that, Eitza. That's very good.
So, Rabbi Wasserman, give us, as somebody who really has written two Sfarim on this, Give us just a thumbnail of some of the other issues that we should be aware of in the workplace that have to do with holidays.
Yeah, so I think the point, if you can go is we need to make sure to be seen and not stay long. I think that's a really important point. What I would do when I would go to these events, if I didn't always go, sometimes I did, is I would call it, especially my wife was coming with me, if spouses are invited, we would work the tables. And we would go and make sure to be seen in a big way and leave. Because the point is to be seen and not participate. I actually had an event once that they were giving out the bonus checks, end of year holiday party. They were giving out the bonus checks. Obviously, you want to show up and get your bonus check. And I spoke with sort of Gershon Bess on the issue, and his etza, not halachic, but his etza was don't sit down. In other words, don't get too comfortable with them. You know, go there, do what you need to do, and leave. So those are a couple of things that indeed to be aware of. So I think that you know that's really the gamut, as we've talked about, is being aware. And I think another important point is just not feeling uncomfortable with being different. And I said that before, I mentioned it before, but I think that's a really important thing. But a lot of this is going to be dictated by the company that we're working out and the environment that it's in. Some are going to be cleaner, like when I was at a law firm. That was a non-issue. It was working at a very white shoe law firm, and things were proper. But then working in other companies that I was working at, things are a little bit more difficult. So know what you're getting into and pre-plan. I think that's really important.
And I would add on to what you're saying. I was saying, I think it's important to look normal. Like, don't be the oddball out for the most part. And with pre-planning, you can look normal and not be the oddball out. Like something like carrying two drinks or showing up for a brief, you know, a brief period. But to be the strange person, I think is not a good idea.
Like, yeah, I heard Rabbi Yitzchak Breidowitz talk about this, how you should act on the job, and he says there are like two types, two extremes. One is a person who thinks he's just like everyone else, and he acts like everyone else, and he's schmoozing, and he's hugging, and he's drinking, and then there's the other type that will show up to work in a secular workplace, and he comes in with a black hat and puts his head down, and he walks to his office, and he doesn't leave from 8 in the morning till 5 at night, and then he'll walk out with a hat and, you know, not look at anyone, and he says neither of those are good, and we need a balance. As you mentioned, we need to be normal. Professor Aaron Tversky, it's Dr. Abraham Tversky's brother, he's a professor at Brooklyn Law, and he said a student once came to him with a yarmulke, and it was a few weeks into school and in law school, and the student says, "Professor Tversky, can I close the door?" So Professor Tversky says, "Yeah, sure." And he's like, "Uh-oh, what's going on here?" So the kid starts crying, and he says, "Professor Tversky, I'm having a really tough time because I want to be like them. I want to be like the non-Jews. I want to be like my classmates, and I'm facing 1,000 nisyonos every day, and I feel my Yiddishkeit is slipping away." And Rabbi Tversky said that that's the exact same thing that somebody feels in investment banking and law and real estate and every other place that you're working in a secular workplace. There are 1,000 nisyonos, and the more we can plan and the more we can make decisions on how we're going to act and what we're going to do in these situations, the better it's going to be. So that's exactly what you're saying.
Well, Rabbi Wasserman, thank you very much for your time. This was supposed to be 20 minutes. It turned into 45 because you and the topic are so interesting.
It's a pleasure speaking with you. Thanks so much.
Kol tov, good day. Bye-bye.